OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties. One county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio. The OTB Podcast Network.
So when Mike Quirk took the job as Leash football manager, he would have thought through the many different possibilities for the year ahead. An unfinished league and potentially no championship at all, I suspect, were not in his wildest thoughts or scenario that he had in front of him. Mike Quirk, good evening.
Hey Joe, how are you?
Strange first year in charge. You're unbeaten in championship thus far.
Yeah, this wasn't one of the permutations that we were looking at, man, to be honest, no.
Incredibly strange times. Yeah, so I'm sure you watched or you've read since about John Horan's interview last night. He was in the Sunday Game and he was making the point that if social distancing is a priority to deal with this pandemic, I don't know how we can play a contact sport. That's what Gaelic Games is. It's a contact sport. I don't really see a point in the foreseeable October or beyond where social distancing won't be a priority. So the chances of a championship feel less slimmer than ever, I would say, from this vantage point this morning.
Yeah, I watched him last night and I just don't think a lot has changed really from what he's saying to what we already knew. I mean, you know, John is working off the best available information that he has right now, but nobody knows what's going to be the case in the next 4 or 5 months, Joe, and that's the reality. Everybody's kind of working off this year in a very blind kind of a way. And yeah, there's a lot of us are hoping there'll be games go ahead and people can get back to some kind of normality, whether that's behind closed doors or not. Mm. But ultimately, no one knows, you know. And like, of course, nobody wants to be in a position where we're putting anybody, players or backroom staff or referees or officials, in a position where, you know, potentially they could pick up this kind of virus and bring it home into their own family. And nobody's going to risk that, and that's obvious. But we just don't know where the numbers are going to be in this thing in the next 4 or 5 months. And I just don't have, I don't see the big panic with people needing to rush to, you know, either call off the championship or, you know, look for certainty in terms of when we can get back training. I just think we got to just ride it out and see where we are in a couple of months' time and make a definitive call in closer to August or September and October.
Yeah, I would totally agree. It doesn't help anyone for the GA to be pressured one way or another publicly.
No, like, what are we getting out of it? What, you know, I mean, do we want an amateur player to go home to, you know, his mom or his dad or a grandparent or a child and pass on, you know, the virus to somebody who might be in a vulnerable position in their own house, you know, for playing a game that they really enjoy as an amateur, whether that be club or county? It can happen the same, you know, at whatever level. Mm. You know, the only difference is the number of people that might be in attendance at a game. And so if you were going to do that behind closed doors, it's really irrelevant whether it's club or county. The risk is the same if you're going to play a game of Gaelic football. And it's just, I'm conscious that, you know, there's a lot of players and there's a lot of managers looking for certainty or looking for this or that. And I just don't see the point. I just think we've got to just really roll with this and, you know, relax with your training. I mean, everybody's, at best case scenario, everybody's away 5 months from a game, you know, in October. That's about as that's our best hope. So if you're 5 months away from any game, we don't need to be training people now or doing your 5 Zoom sessions a week. Just relax and see where we are in a couple of months and then make a call.
Yes, because, you know, the point can be made, well, we need sport back and mental health is very important and all of these things can be put at the door of the GAA. And frankly, that can't be their concern. Of course, everybody would like to get back playing and of course it would benefit us all. But ultimately, they have taken the best advice and acted very promptly at the start of this thing, and you would hope they just continue to do so. And maybe there's a way back where you can train in a socially distant way and in a safe way, and that ticks the mental health box and you get a sweat on and you get your endorphins and you get to see some of your mates and have a chat. But we absolutely don't need to rush to games.
No, look, obviously, you know, training is great, but it is for players. You know, the joy is obviously about a game and competing and getting yourself into that environment. But right now people would take being able to go down to the pitch and have a kick or having a puck, you know, like you were doing when you were 8, 9, 10, 12 years of age, just just that kind of freedom to get out and kind of have a little bit of normality again. And, you know, he made a very valid point last night in the Sunday game that, you know, that would be something that would be very desirable, but how you can control that and supervise that to make sure that your three or four guys having a kick or a puck doesn't turn into a 10-on-10 kind of game or something, you know, and it's a fair point. And then, and you don't want any GA club or any area to turn into a cluster and then have that fall back on the GA. And look, I just think they've been prudent in the whole thing. I know it's frustrating from everybody's point of view, but, you know, like he spoke about the numbers and 50 million of a loss for not running a championship, you would think would force them to be trying to, you know, at all costs run a championship. And they just don't seem to be, you know, willing to take the chance with people's health. And they have to be commended, I think, you know, in that regard for the way that they're approaching the whole thing. And the rest of us, then, Joe, we just got to... You know, we just got to find our lane and find other stuff to do for now. And then we'll see where we are when things happen. And I just think that's the crucial thing that people are getting a little bit carried away with, the need for certainty or the need to call it off. I mean, it benefits nobody from John Horn coming out now and saying, look, the championship's gone, lads, and we'll worry about it next year. Because, you know, what are we gaining from doing that? Just see where we are, see where the numbers are. And perhaps this thing... You know, in 3 or 4 months' time, the numbers are so insignificant that we then can have a meaningful conversation about, you know, if players want to have games and just see where we go. You know,
in short, here your sense as a county manager is everyone just chill out, bit of patience.
Yeah, I suppose it's not the most technical advice, Joe, but yeah, you know, I just don't see the point in you know, I'm certainly not an expert in anything to do with this stuff, but you know, I'm trusting in the likes of Tony Hoolan and all these guys that have our best, you know, interests at heart, obviously, and Croke Park or GA and the people that they've got involved in their committees now are obviously getting, you know, advice from the same kind of bodies. And again, I just think, you know, football players and hurlers and managers of sport teams, you know, they're really good at what they do. But like, we need to trust in the people that have the real expertise in this area. And if those people tell us, yeah, look, you can go back and start training or playing games, or no, you can't for now, then I just think it's silly not to obviously take that stuff in the way it's intended.
Yeah, it's that simple. I think you used the phrase, I think, in your piece in The Examiner. If you can't just have a seat at the adults table here unless you're an expert in this stuff. Otherwise, you might just need to hold your tongue. You're entitled to your opinion. It just mightn't be all that valid or backed up by expertise. And so that's where we are. How have you done things with Laois then? You were progressing along nicely. Division 2 of the league, there were 3 wins, 2 losses, and then shutdown happened. Have you been encouraging the team to keep fit? Have you been sending out, you know, weekly programs, or have you reached a point now where it's, lads, relax, don't worry about it?
Yeah, I was watching a Jordan documentary there, and when I saw the greatest basketball player of all time going around to play smoking cigars, I was thinking, no. You know, everybody could just relax for a little bit. But no, we were tipping away, Joe, like everybody else, I suppose, on Zoom. We were doing, you know, all the collective stuff that we could do. Nothing crazy, but just keeping guys... you know what? It was actually more of a social thing than physical. I mean, all these fellas are going to be training. They're going to be running and doing their work, you know, as much as they can. But the kind of social connection is the thing that we found that guys kind of missed the most. You know, like any group, any team, any work situation, that's, you know, not seeing the same people that you're so used to kind of socializing with. And then we probably maybe 2 weeks ago, you know, we shut it down just because October kind of emerged as the most likely time that we would be playing again. And, you know, I just thought that, like, if you're playing in October, like 5 months away, nobody in their right mind needs to be training for 5 months for a championship situation like that. And, you know, we were kind of hoping that we'd get to play the last 2 games, to be honest, because we had an opportunity to get to, you know, if we won our last 2 games, which we felt were winnable, we had a chance to be in the shakeup of going up, you know, and getting into the talk of getting into Division 1. And they were mad looking forward to that, obviously. But again, you know, that's small potatoes with what everybody else is dealing with right now, I suppose.
No, sure. We're talking in that context. How much notice would you need to get a team in tip-top shape to give a good account of themselves for a championship?
See, I suppose the fact that everybody's in the same position you know, it's not like somebody's going to be getting the jump on you and that they're going to be training kind of 4 or 5 weeks ahead of time. You know, I don't know. I mean, if we could get four, you know, if you got 4 weeks, I think it's loads of time. You know, and everybody's starting at the same point where everybody's going to be at 4 weeks of fitness and 4 weeks of ball sharpness and skills and everything like that. I think that's loads. And like if they are talking about, you know, if the best case scenario does unveil and you know, they get to play some club stuff beforehand and you have them for, you know, 3 to 4 weeks beforehand. It's not ideal, obviously. You'd like a little bit more time and get a couple of challenge games and all that. But look, at this point, Joe, we'd take whatever we could get. You know, if you have a month of preparation, I think that's going to be sufficient in the environment we're probably going to find ourselves.
Okay. Division 2 thus far, there was a draw with Roscommon, there was the win against Armagh, 16 points to 10, that's a really good win against Armagh. There was the Cavan game, which was a loss, a win against Clare away by a single point, and then a loss to Kildare as well. So, very nice start on the face of things. How have you found it? First of all, what's the commute like from your place to Laois? How many hours in the car are you up and down?
Yeah, it's just over 2 hours.
Okay.
So it's okay, it's fine, it's nothing. You know, I've got the guy Morris Horn is based in Tralee. He's my coach. He was manager of Limerick for a couple of years, and he's a Mayo guy. And Morris lives in Tralee, so the two of us travel together. So by the time you're going through some bits and pieces, you've arrived in the same coming home. So the journey is nothing really to talk about. And I've really enjoyed it, to be honest. You know, I think we just have a really really good bunch. You know, a good bunch of a backroom team. Some guys that are really great characters and good to be around and are really, really dedicated to what they're doing. And then you've just got a group of players that have, you know, they've done everything you could possibly want them to do. We started on the 15th of November and you know, everything we've done has just been, I suppose, you know, ball stuff, game stuff, and they've really kind of enjoyed it and bought into it. And it's just a shame that we've kind of, like, you know, just seem to have got caught as we were hitting our stride and things were going pretty well. But it's good. It's good. It's just, it's different. You know, it's different. And it's a big challenge when you go into a situation where, you know, you don't know anybody up there at all. I didn't know a single person when I went into the whole thing. So putting that group together, the management team, and then getting to know all the players and stuff. And it's very challenging, obviously. But, yeah, you know, I couldn't speak kind of well enough about the way they had applied themselves to the whole thing.
Even just getting to know everyone's names and getting a feel for what's going on in their personal lives, you know, where which one's married, which one's got kids, which one's busy with work, which one's not. You're like, that's a lot of names to get to grips with, first of all. How many times have you called people by the wrong name?
Yeah, you know, I tried not to do that a whole pile. I had, like, for the first couple of weeks, I had Owen Kearns, a guy who's done coaching and selector with us as well. And, you know, we used to be doing work and I'd have Owen standing next to me and I'd just keep throwing out names and he'd correct me if I was wrong, but he'd give me a steer. And, you know, that is a part of it. Like, that's actually funny. But when you're talking about maybe meeting a group of, you know, including everybody, players in the back room, you're talking probably 40 or 50 guys. And so it was fun. But it was, look, you just have, you know, when you're from, I suppose, Kerry, you have your own ideas of, you know, this is football and we're the only county that has this kind of real passion for football. And then you go somewhere else and you meet people, you know, like Ross Munley or John O'Loughlin and Kieran Lillis and all these guys who are just as passionate and as professional in their approach as anything you'd have seen in Kerry or anywhere else. And it just opens your eyes a little bit, I think, about the reach of it. And you know, that for guys who maybe don't have that opportunity, as you would in Kerry, of progressing to an All-Ireland final maybe every year and winning trophies and being in the limelight constantly, just the kind of dedication that it requires to keep driving yourself to get to that level is something that's very, very admirable, obviously.
So you would have experienced playing through Kerry, where success was generally pretty regular, and you would enjoy the late summer evenings across July and into August and on good years into September as well. And that is the payoff, you know, that's the good side of things. So what has struck you about the experience of a Laois footballer? So you mentioned the professionalism, which is there, and I don't doubt that. Did you get a sense from any of them that they feel like they're getting a raw deal, or the commitment is, you know, because you're talking to guys, I would presume, ringing them, getting to know them, how have the last couple of years been? Are there many of them who are almost giving you the vibe that, well, geez, the commitment here increasingly is not quite worth the payoff? Or how do they feel about their football?
I haven't got that vibe, to be honest, no. Like, obviously, at the start, there was probably some guys that you know, didn't commit to the whole thing and didn't want to give the time to it, and there was no problem there. They, you know, we just moved on with the guys that did, and but anybody that was, you know, that got involved has just been looking for more and more and more. And I've been very conscious, Joe, as a player, because I know I'm gone a while, but I'm not that far removed from the whole thing. Like, you don't want to flog guys entirely with, like, the amount of contact hours. Like, John Horan actually mentioned 31 contact hours last night, or maybe not contact hours, but hours in terms of dedicated to the intercounty thing. And, you know, like, we're not doing anything near 31 hours. Like, I mean, the idea of your couple of your two training sessions and your game or your session at the weekend, you know, your gym sessions, and then anything outside of that is really stuff that they're doing on their own. That if you're playing intercounty football, you obviously have to live that lifestyle and you know, be dedicated to your diet and to all that kind of stuff. But in terms of the hours that guys had to go, like, we stopped fellas coming. We didn't have any more collective gym sessions, you know, where fellas had to travel from Dublin or travel anywhere to make a specific time to have a collective gym session. We just allowed guys the independence and control to do their gym session on their own. So if they had, you know, time during the day, during their lunch, that they could pop into a gym in their own facility to do 40 minutes in the gym, then they didn't have to be coming out and packing a bag that night again and coming into O'More Park in the Centre of Excellence to the gym. And just stuff like that to try and, you know, relieve some of that kind of, you know, time intensity that intercounty football is really. And then the big thing was just the training, that we wanted to make the training as kind of game-based and as competitive and as ball kind of intensive as we possibly could, so that there wasn't huge amounts of that arduous kind of running where guys were just getting sick of training. And, you know, Tom Hargrove's a guy that, you know, we have as a physical trainer who's superb now, and Tom would have been based in rugby for a couple of years over in the UK. And, you know, like everybody else, you're basing everything on your GPS in terms of how hard they're working, and how hard they're working is the very same as they would be if we were running 100s and 200s. So you don't need to be doing that kind of level of training. So we just came with the idea that we wanted this. I really wanted this to be enjoyable, and I wanted it to be fun, and I wanted them to you know, enjoy the process. Like, the likelihood of Laois winning the All-Ireland and beating Dublin in the final and winning Sam Maguire was probably slim. But I wanted them to make sure that this while we wanted to provide as good a setup as we could, I wanted it to be enjoyable for people that were involved in committing to the whole thing.
Yeah. I'm sure there hasn't been much GAA news of late, but I'm sure your attention was caught by the Ray Walker situation in Carlow, and it raised the whole issue. Well, the Meldonium in his system, he doesn't know how it got there, and that's a specific issue to him. But it did raise the broader conversation about supplements. And in that same ESRI report, which I think John Horan mentioned, the 30 hours a week, it also emerges in there that, like, a huge percentage of players are going off and buying supplements themselves, and they're not running it by management. Even Brandon O'Sullivan in Kerry a couple of years ago bought it in a health shop, and it was contaminated. And there's a study in Australia where they say up to 20% of supplements can be contaminated. So you've got to be really careful where, even in an honest way, you're trying to get your stuff. I know you're fairly clued in with a lot of this stuff. That must have caught your eye. What kind of information is given to players? How on top of that are you trying to be? Was that a wake-up call? Did you have to think, God, what supplements are all my players taking, or did you know already?
Yeah, no, it was a wake-up call, Joe, to be honest. Yeah, like we you know, they have their I think it's the GPA that kind of organize it, but their drugs talk or whatever. But you know, when you look at it, like, it's really one evening, like, where they're getting a presentation and they're told, you know, basically don't take anything unless you run it by the doctor or by the nutritionist. And that's probably the fundamental rule that should, you know, that everybody should adhere to. And you just don't put anything into your system unless it's been run by one of the officials and the team. But it's just, it's, I do know, and I don't, like, obviously I don't know anything about that case, and it's none of my business, but, like, I do worry at times that, you know, they're so professional in the way they train and the way they prepare and the way they do everything. I do think, though, that there probably needs to be a more stringent education program for guys in terms of that side of things, and the new, and what they can take, and new supplements or nutritional things or whatever, because everybody's looking for an edge, and like there's obviously legal edges or whatever that you can, you know, guys can try and take something that's fine, that they're allowed to take to help their performance. I just don't think guys are educated enough in terms of that, and in terms of what they can have. And like our thing was very simple. It was just, you know, you're not, don't take anything at all unless you run it by the doctor, you know, especially. And then if you do that, obviously you're going to be safe enough. But I still think one talk or one presentation, is not really enough for the sanctions that are there, you know. And like that case, obviously he got a four-year ban, was it?
Yeah, he didn't contest it. He didn't appeal it in any way. So your starting point is 4 years. So he accepted the ban as it was handed down to him. His point was, I'm 35, even though this was unintentional, I'm accepting the ban as if it was. That's how he chose to handle it.
Yeah, and that's obviously his prerogative. But I would just see from my side of it now, I can see that, when I saw that and I was saying, Jesus, you know what? Like, I would hate for one of my guys now to have, you know, maybe like the Brendan O'Sullivan one was probably more innocuous, where he went in and he bought something and it wasn't labelled on the bottle and it was obviously contaminated.
Yeah.
Like, and 20% is a shocking number for that to happen. So, I mean, I would really kind of think that, we need to revisit and enforce the point again that, you know, you just should not be taking anything unless it's been passed by the doc, obviously.
Something else we've talked about down the years, which you're in your other role as a pundit, is the cost of running an inter-county team. So you're in there now. What's the average cost of a training session? Why is it so expensive to run these teams when we are literally talking millions?
Food and travel expenses, Joe, you know. The big thing, I think, with the November the 15th, and you know, November 15th, I think, was the date that we were, you know, technically allowed to start in terms of the, when you get knocked out. So teams that didn't qualify for the Super 8s or whatever, you could start on the 15th. And we weren't starting. That's when we started, when we were allowed to start. But, you know, there was teams, I assume there was teams probably start before that. And if you do, you're not being covered for your travel expenses or for your meals. You won't get meals after training. This is what Croke Park have told the county boards to try and alleviate those costs and try to make sure the teams now start when they're supposed to start, which is obviously making sense, because if players aren't getting fed, they don't want to go traveling down, and if they're not getting travel expenses, that's all fine. So it makes that a little bit tighter where guys are starting when they're supposed to start, you know. But the big thing is, like, again, we had a guy traveling from Cork and coming from Dublin, College, Galway, everywhere. And then you're feeding everybody for whatever is there, maybe 40 guys or 45 people every night. And then you've got the hurlers that are training on the other pitch, and they're coming in and they're getting the same travel expenses, the same food. You've the medics. Yeah. That's the big, you know, the food and the travel expenses are the two big things, obviously. I mean, other than that, they're you know, the facilities above where we are in O'More Park are as good as you'll find anywhere, with the centre of excellence they have there around O'More Park, with three pitches all floodlit, and, you know, every night there's somebody out on one of them and they're flat out. But, and then they have their, you know, you go straight in and you have your canteen below and you have your video stuff upstairs. It's all self-contained and in one area, which is a great facility to have, obviously. Right. But that's your money, Joe, is your travel and your grub.
Before you go, The Last Dance on Netflix, you mentioned you were watching it. I am as well. I'm enthralled. Yeah. I'm enthralled by it, and I didn't experience this first time around. I'm not the basketball man that you are. So give me the verdict. Yeah. What do we think of it?
It's outstanding. Yeah, it's brilliant. in 97, that 98, the season that it's real focus on, like, I would have been, you know, basketball crazy, obviously, at that time. I remember the game they went through the last day where he came back wearing 45 in the Garden in New York, and he had 55 points. And I remember watching that game live, and I just relived it when he was talking about and stuff. So for somebody like that now, who's really, really deep into the thing, it's fascinating watching, you know. But I was talking to somebody about it the other day. Like, he never took a cigar out of his mouth.
He's sitting there now,
even talking about it. He's got a cigar and a big glass of brandy, and he's, you know, after a couple of games, he's drinking beers and he's smoking a cigar, even in the dressing room. And I was just like, if we saw a Gaelic footballer now smoking a cigar or having a drink, like, 4 weeks before a game, there'd be a national inquest about the whole thing, you know. And here's the greatest athlete of all time, you know, smoking a cigar constantly after every game. It's fascinating.
In front of cameras. I mean, not being stung here, but just doing it in front of cameras. I haven't seen this week's edition drop, but most episodes thus far include Jordan thinking that somebody is almost half challenging him and then him going out to crush them. And this seems to be the theme of his life right through, I suspect, until his Hall of Fame speech and beyond.
Yeah. He just, like you could call it, like that's, I don't know what that is. That's like he was making stuff up in his own head that people were never saying to him, that just to try and find a motivation. But again, I suppose if you're at that level and you're playing 82 games in a regular season and you're getting to the finals, which is another, 20 or 30 games, you're playing over 100 basketball games every night or every season, like that's a long haul. And especially if you're somebody like that who knows he can go out and get 30 or 40 or 50 any night he wants. And you got to look for whatever bit of motivational aid you can find. But there are certainly a lot of guys that didn't even know they were motivating him, I think, by a simple look or a glance or something. But the guy's magic, yeah. It's a great conversation. Like himself, LeBron, Kobe, Tim Duncan, put them all in a hat. And like you could spend hours talking about him.
Well, let's come back. Let's do that at the end of the series. Come back and have a chat about it in full. Because I know there's an off the bull podcast ongoing at the moment. Kieran Donahue's on it, but we'll do a chat here some evening. I even want to get your take on Phil Jackson and how he's coaching. I'm sure you're watching that with a new eye as well. In the meantime, bit of patience. We'll get games again in due course. Mike Quirk, thanks a million.
Thanks, Joe.
Off the Ball on News Talk.